Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
All right, welcome to the last spooky podcast of the season.
Yep, it's true. You know, I want to rewind a little bit. You remember like a month ago, and I was like, fall is here, cold air is here.
No, I just ignored that.
Yeah, well, you were right to ignore it because it never happened.
I think we're actually finally coming up on it, though.
I mean, it seems a little like it, but like it's like a little windy and it might rain in the next few days.
It's gonna rain on Halloween. Are you happy, you fall boy?
Yeah, that's the revenge we get for this month of 100 degree temperatures.
I'm just saying, we're finally going to get sustained highs in the like the mid 70s soon. That's good.
So what you're saying is you cold weather people, you want it to rain
but
on
Nick,
children and costumes.
I will say that
it held out throughout all October.
It is crazy how little rain we've got.
Well, you know, global warming.
Yeah. I mean, we're all doomed, but, you know.
Well, I will say in the next next week or so, it's going to supposed to rain every day.
Okay, well, that's good. Randy's going to love that.
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
Every day I'll be like, Randy, fall is here. Is it not beautiful?
And I will mumble something at you, probably with curse words in it.
Well, he's just researching more plans for his heat miser ray.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, the same he used on those hurricanes.
Yep, I know. We need rain. I understand that we need rain.
You're just like, I would like it to happen when I'm taking a nap.
Exactly.
That's only all when Randy naps can it rain.
That is, and then when I wake up, it immediately stops.
All right,
that's
now,
all I ask.
I won't force people to hear our weather talk any longer.
No, people love the weather talk, Dave. That's what they tune in for.
But the main thing here, Randy,
Rogues, comics, games, and weather talk.
One final week of scary.
Yes,
we do have a few scary things to talk about. A few scary movies and things.
Yeah, Nick is holding up his end. Actually, you and Nick both held up your end.
Sure.
I watched nothing scary except the movie. The show I watched is about capitalism, and that is, of course, scary.
But I will say, I think you've got plans to watch horror movies this week.
I am watching horror movies on Halloween.
That's pretty amazing.
That could be like wearing the band shirt to the concert. Maybe that's... Is it too on the nose?
No, I think
watch horror movies on Halloween?
No, I think that's my tradition.
All right. Well, I'm gonna.
So that makes it cool, because it's my tradition.
Yes.
They're releasing The Substance on Halloween. I'm watching that on Halloween.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Oh, nice. Yeah, I want to see that. Every word I've heard is good. For people who don't know, is this like kind of like an A24-ish movie?
Yeah.
With Demi Moore?
Yeah, Demi Moore and I forgot the...
Margot Qualley.
It has
something
to do with like this horrific take on like, attempts to stop the aging process, modeling and beauty and all
that
stuff.
Well, yeah, there's a pill that basically will allow you to be your younger self.
That's right.
Like,
I didn't know exactly
what
the premise.
I want to say it's like 48 hours or something, but you have to like take the dose correctly. And if you don't,
I've heard it's like some serious body horror.
So I've heard too.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
And an interesting choice for Demi Moore. So
I've heard that's one of her best.
Yeah. I have not heard anything bad about it, to be
honest. It's no striptease, I bet.
You know what? I heard Striptease was actually a pretty decent movie.
It's fine.
I've never seen Striptease.
But Demi Moore had like a heyday, and she's not been in a ton lately.
Horror is not the genre that I thought she might make a comeback through.
True.
You gotta remember, she's Hollywood old now, so.
Yeah, that's right. And an ancient hag
she's
of
an
like
ancient
in her
crone
50s
of like in her 50s.
Don't call
like
her hagger. Oh, she's freaking gorgeous.
Of course she is.
We're being sarcastic.
We're being sarcastic about Hollywood.
Yeah, that's why Randy says Hollywood old.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Not a lot of games to mention this week, but there are two notable big ones. First, Ticket to Ride put out deluxe train sets for their, like, 20th, 30th anniversary.
Yep,
I don't know how many it is, but you can buy the little $10 train sets. They're different colors. They're deluxe. They're cool looking.
They are very cool looking.
That game has stood the test of time, proved its worth. One of the great intro games or casual games. You can play it as a longtime player, too.
Yep.
That's very cool.
People love trains.
People love trains.
And then the other thing is the new Dungeon Master's Guide is out today. That is the D&D 2024 edition. I actually took one of these home and gave it a read. This is really a good DMG.
I have not had a chance to really look through this one other than a quick browse, and I have to say I was just really liking the artwork in it.
I was going
to
say, yeah, I'm flipping through it right now.
Many pages of which include the characters from the old cartoon.
Yep.
And what looks like, I guess they've aged them up so that they look like they're, like
they're
in their 20s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, look, it's Minsk.
Yep.
Oh, Minsk
and Boo are in there.
Yeah.
They reference various game worlds. There is a chapter on Greyhawk, which some people are very excited about, because Greyhawk has not really been in a thing for a while.
Do they have chapters on other settings?
No.
Nothing on like Eberron and Dragonlance.
Eberron and Dragonlance are mentioned in examples, okay, and that kind of thing. But it is Greyhawk is the one that gets a setting chapter.
Right. We had heard that was going to be the case, and all.
Xanathar shows up in some artwork.
Yeah, there's like all the different worlds are represented in the art and referenced in stories. But there's some chapters on like building the game and. They start with kind of interesting stuff. I've been DMing now for mobile years, and
you can go ahead and say decades.
It's been decades. And
I mean, we've been running this shop for decades.
There only one and a half.
I count the time when we were D-Lair.
Okay, well then it was 2 decades.
Then it's 2 decades plus.
So yeah,
no, there's a piece of artwork that I'm just kind of enamored with. It's a kind of a cool version of Venger.
Yep.
It says he's scrying on his nemesis, Tiamat. I thought they were kind of...
No, no, they hate each other.
Do they hate each other?
Yeah.
The cartoon, I thought they were... Tiamat was basically his sub-boss.
No, he would show up and, like, blast her in the credits, remember?
Yeah, in the opening, Venger, like, shows up and he's about to attack, and then, like, Tiamat shows up and wards everybody off. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They were at odds.
That's a really good piece of artwork.
It is a great piece of artwork, you're right.
Anyway, this starts with, like, sort of the basics of, like... potentially sensitive elements and hope is expectations for the campaign. There's a game expectations worksheet.
Oh,
and
nice.
There's a few of these worksheets throughout. There's a campaign worksheet. There's a like a scheduling worksheet. They definitely did a lot of the practicals of running a game. Not just here's a table for adventures, although they've got that too. Not just magic items, although they do have that as well.
But here's something to try and organize your play and stuff like that.
This game expectation sheet is amazing.
It's really good.
I want to see it.
And there's also, early on, there's a bit where they talk about how to handle absent players, how to handle large groups, and also just a thing I've never seen, that I'm sure this is a thing that's been around, but the notion of like the 1 hour preparation thing. They're like, if you have 1 hour to prep, here's the stuff you should do. If you have an extra hour to prep, here's another thing you can do.
No, that's cool.
And so,
like you said, Randy, very practical-minded
really,
stuff.
Really practical stuff on how to run a game, which I thought was really cool.
You're right. I like this game expectations sheet. That's very cool.
Like I say, there's a few of those worksheets in there for running a game. Like, this is a teaching you how to dungeon master in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Not just not, a...
And of course, DM's Guide have done this before. I'm sure they incorporate a lot of ideas that have been in previous DM's Guide.
For sure.
But... it looks like they legit, even though, you know, we all know this is kind of like, instead of 6th edition, this is like 5.5 or whatever.
Right.
But they really did come up with some neat new ideas to help you out as some new tools.
Also, I'm a fan. You get a giant map that can unfurl.
Must be Greyhawk, right?
That is Greyhawk.
Is it Greyhawk?
Yeah. There's also, like, there's a campaign journal that gives you, like, session notes. There's a character tracker. They've got several sheets that you can use and print out. I actually think... I don't know if they're going to do this, but you know they make those player character guides, or player character sheets you can buy, which, you know, most of us print ours out. But if they made these sheets, like the NPC trackers and all this kind of stuff,
right,
as like a thing you could buy, I would probably buy them to have the nice fancy color sheets and everything.
Yep, I can see it.
It's a really good DMG, and usually the DMG is like, the player's handbook is sexy, all the rules, all the character building, all that stuff, the combat, all that stuff. The Monster Man is all the monsters. The DMG is the also-ran. It always is.
Right.
But this is a really solid book. Like, I was excited to read through it.
Yep. And we've already, like, it has just gone on sale today as we're recording this, which is on Tuesday. And we've already had a lot of people coming in for theirs. I'm impressed that because until these things happen, we never quite know until a new release hits how it's going to do.
Right.
And, it was like, well, you know, are they going to lose people with this or not? But it seems like they've come through.
People are psyched for this, and everybody seems to be enjoying the new volumes. We also do have limited run, the dungeon little treasure tokens.
Oh, yeah.
So we had the inspiration tokens from Foam Brain for the first one, for the Player's Handbook.
And these ones are actual, like, little treasure chest tokens.
Yep. That you can put on your maps.
And they have our logo on them, so that's cool.
Not our logo, just our name.
Just our name. But it has it's got the Rogue's Gallery on the treasure chest. And then you can flip it over, and you, the Dungeon Master, can choose what you want to be on the other side. Is it treasure? Is it a trap? Is it a mimic?
When you get your Dungeon Master's Guide, you will get a free little token. It's 4 tokens. Yeah. 2 are treasure, 1 is a mimic, 1 is a trap.
Right. It's like a little sort of sprue thing that holds them all, you can pop them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, you probably mentioned, but we have the alt cover.
Yep, I did not mention that. We do have the alt cover.
In big numbers, it's a cool cover with Lolth. the Spider Queen on
it. And the main cover's super cool, too. It has all the Venger and Tiamat and all that stuff. Nice. So, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. What else we got, Randy? Right. Anything else?
That's all the games. Let's talk about comics of the week. Now, it is a fifth week, which, as you all know, means probably a little bit of light.
Right.
But there's a lot of graphic novels, even though there's only a handful of single-issue comics this week.
Yeah, we've got, and there are some good comics in the mix too.
Yep.
But it, like you said, it's a lighter week. Fifth weeks are always a little bit weird too.
Yep.
So they're like there's
some weird one shots, that kind of thing. So let's talk about what we got. We got It Happened on Hyde Street, Devour number one. This is the new Ghost Machine.
Yeah.
Their new horror book. This is a one shot tied into that.
You had a few weeks back, Nick. You like this? Jeff Johns did
It was a good.
What was the thing originally? The first thing was just called Hyde Street.
Yep, and it focused on a character named Mr. X-Ray.
Yep. I was flipping through this new one and I glimpsed him. He's in it. But this is like a sort of side one shot that's. You know, like the other one, I think it's got a sort of a Twilight Zone vibe to it.
Yeah, it's
horror,
Twilight Zone, a little
based
more
Twilight Zone.
It's about a street that you get stuck on and are like tormented by random people that are like haunting it.
This particular one, I could tell just from the cover. Speaking of that, what's the Demi Moore thing?
Substance. It's got a little bit of that vibe.
It's about like a sort of a miracle weight loss thing, and someone trying to decide whether to use it or not. And obviously, and there's weird horror stuff that that happens in this as well.
We've got the Penguin Special tying into the Max series. This is just a reprint of a few different Penguin stories.
Yep. And you know, sort of speaking of that. I was just organizing some stuff in the DC graphic novel section the other day, and I was reminded, I think we are not always necessarily giant on Tom King's works, but Tom King is a sought-after writer for many of you, and there is at least one volume of his Penguin series is out, so I made sure to face that out for folks. Anyway, if you're in a Penguin mood after watching, whatchamacallit, Colin Farrell go, wah, wah, wah,
wah. He does not do that.
All right, that's true. Oh, have you seen it like I have?
No. I'm just guessing because this is like dark and realistic.
Whack, whack.
He should most definitely go wah, wah, wah.
But anyway, I believe Tom King's story was about the Penguin trying to go into retirement and finding forces, both law enforcement and criminal, that would kind of pull him back. Just a reminder that we have that.
Then we got Poison Ivy, Swamp Thing, Feral Trees, number one. This is a one-shot by the writer of Poison Ivy that brings her into conflict and also collaboration with Swamp Thing, and another member of the Green that I didn't recognize but clearly came from like a Swamp
Thing.
There's
multiple
book.
Members of the Green.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Called like The Hill.
Yeah.
It actually was really cool how
it's
they
a really
drew
cool
it.
One-shot.
Oh, it's Mike Perkins. That explains
Perkins
it.
Perkins does some great work in there.
Yeah, I didn't know. There's other members that are like, they clearly are Swamp Thing-esque. That they run into in this kind of like, it's like this diseased, cursed kind of forest area.
Yep.
And it's like in like a bayou, it's outside of Gotham, but it's like in winter, so it's cold and snowing and stuff too. It is very much a continuation of the thematics established in the Poison Ivy ongoing series. But yeah, it's an interesting kind of dark story about her, the way she is and isn't similar to Swamp Thing, Swamp Thing is like, oh, you're stuck between two worlds, and she's like, what? No, she's like, I'm devoted to the Green, and he's like, no, you keep a foot in human affairs, and she's like, I'm always trying to kill them. But then
I thought that was really interesting.
But then Swamp Thing says something very insightful, and he's like, and how often have you succeeded? And she's kind of like, it kind of shuts her up, and suggest, Manny, do you remember back when Ostrander was writing Suicide Squad, how he made out that Deadshot, who could like hit almost anything, why hadn't he killed Batman? And the suggestion was that there was something subconscious in him that was keeping him from
this
doing
it. This was similar to that,
and
yeah.
this was similar to that. And I thought it was a cool bit of insight. So if you want kind of a dark horror esque story featuring a team up between Poison Ivy and Swamp Thing, good standalone.
These last couple of issues of Poison Ivy, the first All In and then this one, have really made me want to revisit G. Will Wilson.
It's a good run. She's been on it for a couple 2-3 years now or something like that. Yeah. So
we got the Wonder Woman Uncovered. Dave, I know you always like these cover books.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is exactly as described. It is a collection of recent covers and variant covers. You know, just in a nice comic book format. I've gotten these for any number of titles, like Batman and
Nightwing,
Titans, I think, mm-hmm. maybe they did one, Catwoman or something.
Catwoman.
Anyway, these are really fun. Like, I'm just flipping through it right now, and there's this awesome one from Jen Bartel where Diana's like, it's like her from behind, but she's got like a denim jacket with like kind of 90s style Princess of Themyscira emblazoned on it, and a really good one.
I know there was a good Brad Boland one in there.
Yeah, I mean, Boland can still kill it on these Wonder Woman covers. Chris Bacalo, there was one that I actually stumbled across a few weeks ago online and didn't even know what it was from at first. It's one of the variant covers from Wonder Woman Black and Gold, and it looks like an ancient, like one of those old Greek vases.
Oh, yeah.
But it has, like, Darkseid facing off with Wonder Woman on it. And I posted, and I was just like, how cool is this? And, I got a lot of likes on that social media thing, so clearly people were impressed with the art. And lo and behold, here it is in a format I can actually get to. Anyway, cool Wonder Woman cover book. You probably know whether or not that sounds cool to you, but we don't get a ton of those, so get it while you can.
Second issue of Batman Last Halloween comes out this week.
Yep. Klaus Janson doing the art. And an appearance I saw by Penguin, Catwoman. You know, you always kind of look forward to the villains in these things.
We have a new book from Distillery, another horror anthology, a one-shot called Come Find Me, an autumnal offering. This is curated by Becky Cloonan and then has all women creators.
I believe it's all women or non-binary creators.
Okay, cool.
Because I think that the creator I used to know as Emily Carroll is going by E.M. Carroll now.
Okay.
But, like, their stuff, like, what was it, Through the Woods, I think,
mm-hmm.
remains one of my favorite horror graphic novels ever. And I hadn't had time to sit down and read it yet, but I know that they contribute, like, a story in there. And the art is, like, through the roof great. All the stories, like, whatever their overall writing quality is, I don't know, but I can say the art at a glance looks great.
I will say, Becky Cloonan has a knack for writing horror. I like Somna quite a bit. And then what was the one that she did about the haunted apartment building?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of that one, but that one was really good, too.
Yeah, I don't recall that one.
Man,
it was like an apartment building that she did.
I've got it too, and I don't remember the name of it. But
I call it the haunted apartment.
She's done kind of some kind of haunted house book that was really good. Yeah,
right. And so she writes and draws a full story in here.
Yep.
This looks gorgeous.
We've had a lot of horror anthologies this last month. I feel like this may, if nothing else, it is the best looking one.
Yes.
Nick, what else you got in your single issue stack there? I see.
The only ones I've got are Wolverine Revenge number 3, the Jonathan Hickman and Greg Capullo book. And then I'm still really digging Ultimate X-Men. This is the 8th issue. We're seeing the kind of cult of the Children of the Atom come to fruition.
I fell off reading that book, but every time there's a new issue out, I'm like, I think I might pick this up and trade.
I know I'm going to, because we're seeing more and more mutants in here, and they're portrayed in such interesting ways, and Peach Momoko's artwork is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really curious to see where she takes it, because
mutants as, like, kind of like urban Japanese folklore for modern times, but, like, at least with the vibe, I think, for the people perceiving it as being more supernatural.
Yeah.
Like, it's like that's how they read it. So it reads almost like if you were watching an anime and it was, like, about supernatural things at a high school. That's what it almost feels like. It's a cool new take on me.
It is.
There's some reprints this week. Frankenstein, number 1.
Mm-hmm.
DC All-In, number 1.
Yep.
And Deadpool, I think, number 6 or 7. The one introduces his daughter.
Right. Should we talk about the big omnibus collection?
You didn't give me my single issues.
Oh, sorry.
I wanted to mention just NYX 4.
Oh yeah, that was really good.
Which you said was good, but I actually haven't read yet. But
enjoyed.
I've been liking NYX.
Oh right, I forgot it's a Chasm Curse of Kane week.
And I have to mention Chasm, the Curse of Kane, which there's only one more issue left in this, I think, and this is the issue where everybody gets on the same page. Interestingly, the bad guy in it, who turns out to be what's his name, Druig, however you say it. The Eternals guy.
Yeah,
I don't know if you know this.
Yeah.
He is, like, toying with the affairs of men, and like, they really make him out to be this Saw-like sadist, you know, like the dude in Saw movies.
Jigsaw, yeah.
And, I was kind of happy that they didn't run too long with God, who's the clone? Ben Reilly. With Ben Reilly being sort of under his control. That is kind of formally revealed in this issue. Ben Reilly and the other dude, Scarlet Spider, Kane. They get on the same page, same with Hallows Eve. And it looks like they're going to try and take down Druig, or at least stop his scheme in the next issue. Which is interesting because he's an Eternal, and they're just a bunch of doofuses. But yeah, I'm still enjoying this weird ass book. So, trades and stuff.
Yes. So there's a bunch of trades and big hardcovers this week.
Yep.
Really notable is the DC versus Marvel Omnibus.
Yep.
This is
Behemoth.
It's a behemoth. It is all the DC and Marvel stuff that's been out of print because they've been fighting for so long.
Yes, this is going to be like a rare time when it's in print, and you probably need to get
like
it
now or it's going to go away.
It.
But it's got, in addition to the DC versus Marvel, the 4-issue series that like fans voted on who won the fights.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That the iconic 90s thing.
That is sort of the central part of it. But there's also the all the one-shots. There's like a Punisher Daredevil and a Batman Punisher. And
my favorite is
Silver Surfer Superman.
X-Men Teen Titans from the early 80s. Yep. That was a great one.
Yeah, it's a good batch of stuff. I don't know what all is in there, to be honest. I believe through.
Is there going to be one more that'll have
the next
like,
one will be the Amalgam Universe.
Are they gonna do maybe not the Justice League Avengers thing, or was that its own
thing?
That
was its own thing.
Okay, yeah. Just checking. I wasn't sure if that would make the cut.
I never read but apparently Green Lantern, Silver Surfer, Unholy Alliances.
Yep.
That sounds like a cool crossover.
Yeah.
I forget what the deal was with that one, but yeah, that does sound cool.
I think I own a lot of these, but I'm glad to have the chance to get it all in the big now hardcover.
Yeah,
so.
not what you call cheap, but again, it's like a beautiful collection, and this is sort of a limited time offer.
We got the Fantastic Four Full Circle Expanded Edition. This is a FF book that Alex Ross did a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Nick, you've read this, right?
I enjoyed it. It was very kind of like classic FF. I can't remember particulars on it.
Okay.
I just remember really enjoying it.
I think it does. They're in like the negative zone or something like
that. Yeah, it involves the negative zone.
And this is like if it was a Blu-ray, it'd be like the ultimate expanded edition.
Didn't you tell me
special
it has like
edition?
280 pages?
288 pages of bonus material. So I know it's like all the behind the scenes thing, probably a lot of like roughs and stuff like that. I believe there's commentary from Alex Ross.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't it reprint a couple of issues of FF?
One issue of FF, issue 51 of the original run, which I think was like Galactus stuff, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But I'm not 100% sure on that. Because that sets up the story that Ross was, you know, doing for his story.
Yeah.
But if you're a process person, if you like Alex Ross, if you like the Fantastic Four, if you just like big, cool additions, this one's definitely a one-of-a-kind kind of thing.
We have a new OGN called, we call them Giants. This is from the creative team of Die.
Yep.
Kieran Gillen and I forget
Hans.
The artist.
Stephanie Hans.
But, let's see. I'm trying to think. I made the sign for it, but I don't know if I gleaned enough from the description to describe it. I feel like if you've read Die and you know Kieran Gillen's reputation,
you know their vibe.
And he did like what back in the day? He did what was his big breakout one?
Wicked and Divine.
I was gonna say Phonogram,
but Phonogram and Young Avengers too.
Yeah.
I think, you know, as a concept, it sort of sells itself. We already had a number of people with it in their subscription queues.
Yeah.
So
I think this one is going to do quite well for us.
Yeah.
There's also the Birthright Volume 1 hardcover. This is a Joshua Williamson. I forget who the artist is.
Yeah, I forget who the artist is, but this collects the first, 25 issues?
I think it's the first half, essentially.
These days, people know Joshua Williamson probably best for, like, some longer runs on, like, DC books like Flash.
Yeah.
But also over in the, what do they call it, the Energon Universe stuff, he's been writing, he wrote Duke and Cobra Commander.
G.I. Joe.
And he's going to be writing the main G.I. Joe
right.
book. He's been kicking butt on these series.
Yep.
And this was something he did like, I don't know, 10 years ago or whatever for
it's
Image,
longer,
his like creator-owned book, which had a cool premise, which is to say a family in the sort of modern world that their kid went missing or something like that.
Yeah, playing catch with his dad, and I think they assumed he ran away, but in fact he found like a portal that sends him to...
Goes to another
it's almost like
realm.
A Narnia
yeah.
riff,
yeah.
except that then things change quite a bit. It's like they just think he's missing or dead, and I don't know how much time passes for them, but when they see him next, maybe it's like a year later?
It's like a 20-something, yeah.
He basically looks like
He's
Conan.
A man, he looks
yep.
like Conan... And you're like, oh, he's, like, become some sort of warrior, but with, like, some dark secrets. to be gleaned. Had really good artwork, I remember. And yeah, this looks like the ultimate kind of collection of it. I think all 25 issues inside it.
It's not the full thing.
Is it not?
No, it's half.
Oh, it ran for 50 issues. Oh,
okay.
So,
yeah, so but 25 issues is like a nice big bite.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. I've read a fair amount of this. I may have read all the ones in Volume 1, but I'm looking forward to giving it a reread. This is a really good series.
Yeah, artist's name is Andre Bresson.
Yeah.
He
did Dark Ride with him as well.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
There are a couple books from DK Books. These guys that do the Marvel encyclopedias and all and that kind of stuff. Really good books. There's one called D&D Worlds and Realms that is all the different D&D worlds, you know, Eberron, Dragonlance, Greyhawk.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And then there's the Warhammer 40K Ultimate Guide.
Yeah, I think I'm going to probably pick this up. If you have a fascination with Warhammer, whether you're already into it or have just heard about like those weird space marines and their dark setting and their dark future and all that, This is a book that's meant to be like an ultimate kind of overview, and it's illustrated maybe almost entirely with beautiful photographs of their best models. And you know, so these are like their champion expert painted stuff of all the various Space Marine legions, the Imperial Guard, Chaos Space Marines, Tyranids, all the orcs, space orcs, all the factions that people love. And it's going to be probably as good an overview of 40K as you're ever likely to get.
Yeah.
There's not just the pictures of the models, but they like have like little explanations of like, I'm looking at this one. It's a Tyranid. It's one called a Neurolictor, and it has like labeled its decapitating claw, sensor tendrils, mind emits a psychoterror effect. Anyway, these are very entertaining and, as always, very metal descriptors. It's really, really impressive looking, and it covers everything. Like, the Tau are in there, the Harlequins, the, Dark Eldar and Eldar. So, if you want to see what this Warhammer thing's all about, this is your book.
It's true. Then we got the Ascender Compendium. This is the sequel to Jeff Lemire's Descender, which is a sci-fi book.
Oh, yeah.
This is sort of a little more fantasy-tinged one that followed that up. And then Chronicles of Doom, which is not about Dr. Doom.
Right, but in some ways it quasi is.
It's about the rapper MF Doom.
Right, who took Doom's kind of persona, or look as his visual style.
Yep.
But who passed away recently and has been... much memorialized and much thought about, and so is this like a biography kind of?
I think so. Yeah, it's a graphic novel biography.
We could not keep in that Dr. Doom story that came out recently, that one-off comic that had like one quote from one of his lyrics. So yeah, the MF Doom fans out there, just know we have the MF Doom book.
Yes. All right, we're gonna take a quick break and then come back with some news and some topics. All right, we just got one trailer to talk about and then a little bit of news, but let's talk about the trailer first. We watched the trailer for Man on the Inside, which is the new Netflix show by Mike Schur, who created The Good Place, Parks and Rec, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, basically all good TV.
That's a pretty solid track record.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Mike Schur has rarely let me down. He had one at Peacock that I really liked that was about Native Americans and a casino, and it was really good, and Ed Helms was in it. It got canceled after two seasons, unfortunately, but it was good.
Two seasons isn't nothing.
It's not nothing.
So this one looks like it's kind of a little bit of a look at aging through the eyes of Ted Danson, who, and apparently based on some true story,
It is based on a documentary called The Mole Agent, which is a Spanish film.
Oh, wow. I'm sure it's wildly tweaked for TV, but... Ted Danson is what, an older guy who's feeling a little bit directionless.
Older widow. His daughter comes and tells him to find something to do, and he answers down the newspaper for a
investigative assistant or something like that.
A private investigator wants to send him inside an old folks' home for, I can't remember what the exact deal, like fraud or something.
Yeah.
And he's looking for suspects, but he goes in and sort of goes native and has fun in a sort of all wacky retirement home hijinks.
Yes. Not since Cocoon have you seen so many wacky retirement home hijinks.
Anyway, Ted Danson's always good. Mike Schur is always good. This trailer is solid. I will definitely watch this.
Yeah, I mean, it looks good. It looks fun.
And it has that guy who's in Dune.
Yes, whose name is Stephen McKinley.
Stephen McKinley?
Stephen McKinley Henderson is his full name.
Okay.
Yeah, he's been in a bunch of stuff. This is going to have, like, a who's who of people you'll recognize. I guess notably working with, like, from Brooklyn Nine-Nine and all the others, like, and The Good Place, Mark Evan Jackson and Stephanie Beatrice show up. So
His the Shearer players.
Yeah. This looks fun. I love Ted Danson. I even liked the sitcom that he was on. Was it Mayor of New York?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was not great, but he sells it.
Yeah.
He's fun to watch. So I'm glad that he's going to... Mr. Mayor. That's what it was. But I'm glad he's teaming with Mike Schur. They seem to have a really good chemistry. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yay. All right. Alien Romulus 2 is in the works. Fede Alvarez in talks to direct. I have not seen Alien Romulus yet. I don't know if this is a good idea or a bad idea.
You know, in general, I would say, like, it's nice when things can stand alone, but I guess the shock for me when I watched Alien Romulus with Nick a couple months back was that it was good and continued a series that also I felt should have died, you know, after two movies. So I guess, like, basically, if the overall quality can kind of be the same, or if Fede Alvarez is like, I'm going to use some of the characters and concepts from it, but do things different or find a new tone or whatever, I'm interested because he surprised me so much with Romulus.
Yeah,
what do you think, Nick?
I mean, I agree with that. I think he brought something different to the table while working within, like kind of the alien world.
Right, like you get your alien stuff in this. You will not be denied alien things in Alien Romulus because it's, you know, try something new or whatever.
This is also on the cusp of we're getting the Noah Hawley alien show,
right,
which is going to be about basically Earth being occupied by aliens or overrun. So I don't know exactly the tone. Yeah,
occupied makes
much.
It sounds like they have camps and stuff.
Well, you know, that you could kind of do that. I've heard some rumors, and nothing substantiated at all, but of, like, Fede Alvarez getting together with Ridley Scott and sort of, like, combining their worlds together.
You know, we talked about this when we talked about Alien Romulus. There are elements of, like, Prometheus and stuff that do show up in the latter, I don't know, quarter of the movie, kind of. And I wasn't wild to see them, but they did accomplish that thing that I kind of like when it happens in comics and other stuff, which is to say they took something I kind of don't like, and they did it pretty well.
They made it palatable. Yeah.
And so, you know...
Apparently this is... I did not realize that this was the movie series that I can't quit. I just watch, regardless of whether or not I like it.
Right.
Or whether or not it gets good reviews. I just kind of... I'll watch it.
Yeah.
And most of the time, I can find something I really enjoy in it. So.
I'm that way with Kroll.
Well, mine has a little bit more stuff than
there's more than just one movie?
One movie of Kroll. But I do like that you brandish your the Kroll glaive a lot.
Yes. You know, it is the greatest weapon in the known universe and the one thing that can stop the beast.
That's true.
Although you also have to use the power of true love. I overall I think that's good because Fede Alvarez made like the first alien movie I've liked since Aliens. Like Nick, I know you have enjoyed more of them than I have.
I can't.
But I will say this, and I can say that of many of them too, that they at least had stuff I like in it. But this had more persistent stuff. Like I actually was like, that was a pretty good movie.
No,
and
I agree.
Don't know that I could still really quite say that of Alien 3. Or Alien Resurrection, like I was like, there were parts, but like if somebody was like, is that a good movie? I'm like, eh.
In the grand scheme of things, there are only three good Alien movies.
Yeah,
there's Alien, Aliens, and Alien Romulus.
Yep.
Alien 3 is like an asterisk if you include the David Fincher cut that actually is a better film, but that's not technically.
It's a little like, well, you know, this isn't quite a good comparison because the Rocky movies actually have a. They have a surprisingly good track record.
The Rocky movies, most
of them are good.
I think the Rocky movies are very entertaining.
But it reminds me of how Creed kind of came up and we're like, well, that could have been like the death of it, right? Like just like, oh, we're branching to a whole nother character. That, you know, it's very kind of incestuous and going back in, on like lore, the lore
Creed to... Creed had three through. Additional movies that were right. really good.
But my point is that, yeah, Creed ended up being good.
Yeah?
Like, really good. And so, yeah.
So what you're saying is we obviously need the Alien Creed
saying crossover? Alien Romulus is the Creed... Oh, you
weren't,
Alien movies.
You weren't saying that they needed to cross over, so you get an Alien Creed.
You know what?
Battle of the...
You know what? if Rocky and Creed have to team up to train somebody to fight an alien in the arena, I'm there for it.
Uh-huh. The Queen is ready for her showdown.
That's right. My favorite was the trash talk that the Queen gave. Yeah. Nobody really expected that, and then she's just foul-mouthed. what else we got, Randy?
Well, we've also got Running Man news.
Really?
Yeah, of all things.
All things 80s are reviving.
So this, Nick and I were talking about this, like, I feel like we should have known this already. Maybe we did and forgot about it. But Edgar Wright is supposed to be directing the new Running Man.
Wild.
He is co-writing.
I actually think that's a good fit.
He's co-writing it. The Glenn Powell is going to star.
Just to remind people, Edgar Wright did all the movies like Shaun of the Dead and stuff, right?
Surely no one listening to this doesn't know who Edgar Wright is.
I don't know. Not everybody knows
but
those directors.
Recently he did Baby Driver and Last Night in Soho.
And also Scott Pilgrim.
And Scott Pilgrim.
Somewhat relevant.
Yep.
Anyway, yes, he is. He was also supposed to do Ant-Man, but that didn't work out.
Right.
We're saying he has a vision, usually.
Glenn Powell is going to be the lead. Josh Brolin is in talks to be the villain role. They've also got a few other people in it.
William H. Macy, Michael Cera. Yes.
None of those people are listed in this article, though.
I know, but there was announcements today. Okay. I was just trying
Cera,
to find them.
I don't want him ruining this movie.
Michael Cera is fine.
Michael Cera makes me want to punch him always. Now, if he's playing like the game show host or something like
he
that.
Might
that
be.
Will be
that
Josh
would be
Brolin.
Is that what he's doing?
Right?
Theoretically, but I don't think he's got enough charisma for that. You need somebody.
Josh Brolin could be the survivor. He could be the running man, even though
no,
he's getting a little older.
He's not the running man.
But
the
he's
running
like
man
the villain.
Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell. Who's that?
Twisters and
Average. He's up
and
comer guy.
The Hitman.
Yeah.
Yep.
And now he's having a moment right now, Dave.
Yeah, but I have yet to be impressed.
He's playing what? Was it Ben
Richards?
I'm
still waiting to be impressed.
Yes.
Ben Richards,
yes.
I believe, is what
yeah.
his...
I suspect this will be closer to the novel than the original movie, because the movie
yes.
took some liberties, as all Schwarzenegger movies do.
Is that one of
like
those...
Basically
is that one of those Richard Bachman,
it's Richard
a.k.a.
Bachman
Stephen
book.
King?
Yep. Yep.
I mean, the movie has basically... They use Ben Richards and the title Running Man, and...
That's it.
The novel is completely different.
Do we really think it'll be closer to the novel and
yes.
not like a re-envisioning of the movie?
I think
yes.
it probably will.
Because like the movie, the movie did actually have like lots of elements of satire and kind of dark humor.
But here's the thing:
it was actually weirdly prescient.
So, but here's the thing: in the movie, he's like a former cop who gets thrown in the system and that kind of thing.
No,
yep.
He's like a blue collar worker, isn't he? And then,
no,
like,
no,
he
was. No, you're thinking of Total Recall. He was a cop who they framed and they did digital manipulation
yeah,
and made
was,
it look like
he
fired
a
on a riot.
He was
oh,
a gunner.
Right,
yeah.
right, right,
so
right. Now I was thinking, okay.
That's the movie.
Yeah.
In the book, he's a man who's participating in a violent reality show called The Running Man to win enough money to revive his gravely ill daughter.
Right.
None of which is in the movie.
Correct.
No. So I have a feeling they're going to take a completely different tack on this.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is probably what they should do. Like, you can't remake the Running Man movie and make it better. That movie... is right for what it
right
exactly
for better or worse
be.
It was the best at what it could
yeah.
At the
so
what
I,
it was shooting
I'm, I'm
for.
Hoping
zero,
they will
no plane zero
I'm hoping that what this will be is a different take on the book
Killian should I read this book?
I don't know, I never read the book.
Oh, you haven't read it?
No.
Oh, I thought you'd read it.
No, I just
it's fine. I mean it wasn't I mean all the Bachman books are kind of
I guess for me I just
right.
I don't want it to be a remake of a movie that I think is perfectly good. Like
right.
that would be a bad thing.
But a satiric like the movie's satirical take on like on the future and also it's
reality
television
in general that would be good.
Right. And the way that what I thought was prescient about it before was that there was a clear class divide.
Yep.
The bread and circuses of the show was meant to kind of entertain the masses and keep them from thinking about revolting. And then there was the, you know, even the doctored footage of the stuff felt like very kind of modern, you know,
yeah.
Stuff with AI and deep fakes and all
yeah.
that stuff. Yeah. But I'm open to Wright's interpretation of the book or, you know, whatever he ends up doing with it. That sounds kind
of
cool.
He's one of those directors I don't think has made a bad movie. I think most of his movies are exceedingly watchable.
I would say that's probably true. Yeah.
Then we've got Disney just announced their TV slate for 2025, or sort of announced. It's trickling out on various websites.
Any right. return of Wizards of Waverly Place?
No, not that.
Boo.
I mean, it is. It's coming out.
I was joking. I don't know anything about it.
No.
But yeah,
Ortega is coming back as like the.
Is that who? Is that? Yeah. Oh, is that what she started on?
She started on Wizards of Waverly Place.
Wild. Who okay.
Jenna Ortega.
Oh, right. That's right.
Yeah. I never watched. I think I probably watched clips of it. But
I assume that you could take any sort of young actress and say, were they on a Disney Channel movie?
Yes.
And the answer is yes.
Yes.
Many times out of I guess first thing is end of January 2025 is going to be your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, which is the animated Spidey in College?
I believe that is correct.
They're doing a prelude miniseries in comics that Christos Gage is co-writing.
Yeah.
And I expect that'll be pretty fun. I'm ready for a new Spidey animated series.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering if we'd heard anything like cast wise, if like, and I thought they had.
Maybe so.
John Goodman is Electro. Just made that up.
John Goodman is Spider-Man.
I don't know.
What if it was like a cranky Uncle Ben?
Yeah, yeah. In March we will get Daredevil Born Again.
Okay. Remind me, what vibe is that going for? Is it going to be hardcore like the Frank Miller comic?
They haven't
told us. Okay.
They we don't really know anything.
Because
casting stuff, we don't know anything else.
I did like the lighter Daredevil and She-Hulk, but I assumed that was not what they were going
to
do.
This is going to be more akin to like the Netflix.
I hope it will be. I hope it won't be all the way to Netflix. I tried rewatching some of the Netflix stuff recently, and it's boring. I hope that it still has a little bit of the Marvel flair.
But I
kind of agree.
I bet it has the violence. But I bet
it
is
more violent. Yeah,
it'll be more violent, but a little bit more up-tempo than the Netflix. Okay.
Is what happened to Karen Page in the comics going to happen to her on the show?
I think so. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they'll do something else because, A, it's not written by Frank Miller, for whom women were either ninjas or horse.
Yeah.
And B, Deborah Ann Walls is an actress everybody likes. I don't think they'll do that to that character.
I would hope not.
I think it'll be something else. It probably will be something where gives up his identity.
Right, like they'll keep some of the core stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's the core of it, really. That's the core of the story.
Right.
So they are bringing in some good voice actors for Friendly Neighborhood. So,
yeah.
Charlie Cox is going to be Matt Murdock. Coleman Domingo is Norman Osborn.
Okay.
Hugh Dancy is Dr. Octopus.
All right.
Paul Tompkins is the wizard, which
nice.
I mean, that's fun.
The wizard's a weird deep cut, by the way.
Yes,
that's a Fantastic Four villain.
But I like doing some oddball stuff like that. It's fun. I think it should work.
At some point, they're saying Ironheart, but we don't really know. And then
that's a live action one.
Yes.
Okay.
August 6th, we'll get Eyes of Wakanda. Eyes of Wakanda is a 4-part animated series. It's produced by Ryan Coogler, directed by Todd Harris, he's a storyboard artist who designed the Hulk versus Thor fight in Thor Ragnarok.
Hmm.
And according to the head of TV Marvel, Brad Winterbaum, this is the animation series that's most tied to the MCU. Basically, it's a 4-part animated anthology that follows warriors throughout Wakandan history who are tasked with traveling the world to retrieve vibranium artifacts.
Huh.
That means there will almost certainly be some Wakandan person in World War II trying to get Cap's shield back.
Probably so. Which is a fun idea.
So, it's interesting because to me this sounds interesting, but like 4 parts, it's be quick in and out. Like it doesn't sound like super exciting to me. But he says that it expands on the history of Wakanda and expands in the MCU at different time periods. I'm like, oh, I actually seen the MCU at different time periods is something I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Says if you're a fan of the movies, this show's gonna be a real treat.
Okay.
We shall see. And then October 2025 we get Marvel Zombies. I'll be curious to see that because they're. Their Marvel Zombies What If was great.
Yeah. It's one of the better What Ifs. In a sea of pretty good. One was
definitely
standout. I need
to watch those at some point.
You do. They're good. I'm bummed that What If Season 3 isn't on here. Maybe they'll still announce it. But
yeah.
Because they teased it at the end of Season 2.
It's true.
And I want to see those What Ifs.
But they did tease the Marvel Zombies show like a couple of years
they
ago
did.
Or
they
something.
Did.
Saying, oh, we're going to expand on this. So it's good to see that they're actually following through.
And then Wonder Man is getting December release, which... what they're saying about Wonder Man, it's under the Marvel Spotlight banner, which is previously where Echo was.
Okay.
Echo I liked, but it felt more like a Netflix series. It was a little more boring. It was a little less MCU. And they're saying that basically these are the ones you have to tune in without knowing so much background information.
Right.
Which sounds cool, but I want Wonder Man to be like, I want to be more of a sequel to She-Hulk, really. That's what I want it to be.
Right. Wonder Man seems like actually one where... I would like it kind of steeped in the Marvel Universe.
It's not going to be.
because although I think you could still do the stands alone, but you could reference, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. or Hydra or something like that. You know, maybe he's playing a guy who goes up against Hydra in a cheesy movie version of it.
It sounds like they're not going to do any of that. It's Yahya Abdul-Mateen is the star, like him. Yep. He was Black Manta, right?
He was.
Okay.
And
that guy kind of gripe about, like, this isn't real acting.
He did, yes.
Yeah.
Kevin Feige says, basically, they're taking new storylines, new characters, new places. And this is on a Marvel podcast. He's like, sometimes they'll hit and sometimes they won't. And I'm like, oh, that's not a good thing to be saying already.
Wow. Is Wonder Man, do we know, is he like going to be like a wannabe actor? Like, do we know
we have a show
about...
coming up that we talked very little about called Wonder Man that I won't talk about much today either, except say it's extremely different than what we've done before. That's all we know.
There hasn't been anything that y'all have gleaned in the past?
Nothing.
I thought you knew about Marvel,
nope.
Randy.
They've told us nothing about this.
Okay. I bet they do kind of like the B-movie actor that gets superpowers.
I guess. I'm nervous about this, because honestly, Wonder Man's a character I really like, not as much as Dave likes him. He's Dave's boyfriend.
Yes, that's right.
In the same way D-Man is mine.
Yes.
But...
In the same way that Sleepwalker is Nick's.
And Sleepwalker is Nick's. Those are all our Marvel boyfriends.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. Well, I see in the credits that Ben Kingsley is credited as returning. Okay. So, his Trevor Slattery.
Okay, that's kind of fun.
From the Iron Man stuff.
What bums me out is that for the longest time, I had the ultimate faith in Marvel and Kevin Feige. And of late, it seems like he stepped back from things. And I don't have the same faith in Brad Winterbaum. And this year has been a real down year for the MCU.
Yeah.
And so I miss having this certainty that I'm going to like all this
stuff. Is that more Feige and Winterbaum and more, or is that more Bob Iger?
Oh, Bob Iger definitely has a lot to say about that.
Like,
but he's still in charge.
We're only going to do the things.
And I really hate that. I feel like Bob Iger came in and screwed up the MCU.
But didn't they also announce just recently that Spider-Man 4 is actually happening?
They did announce Spider-Man. Yeah. So next year will be Spider-Man 4 and Fantastic Four and... No, that's in 2026.
The Spider-Man
4, Spider-Man, Avengers, Fantastic Four is all 2026, right? Or is Fantastic Four next year?
Fantastic Four should be next year.
Yeah. So there's a Spider-Man and Avengers coming up in like an extra year. So there's still hope for me. But I miss loving every Marvel release, and it's been a while.
I think next year you will be in like a Marvel deluge because we're getting six shows.
None of these, I'm not super excited about any of these. Like, I'm interested in them. None of them sound bad to me, but none of these are like where I was when like when they were in a Hawkeye show,
right?
As much as I love Falcon Winter Soldier, like they seem to have moved off the stuff that was my stuff and onto other things.
So what you're saying
fine.
Is they're not catering to you in particular.
That is correct.
And you have a beef with that.
I don't know. I feel like Cap 4 is going to be right up your alley.
I hope so. I'm bummed that like some of the things that I really liked did not take off. Like Ms. Marvel, She-Hulk, The Marvels. I loved all of that. And I feel like all of it's going to be quietly being swept under the rug. And I'm worried they're going to go back in the direction of actually something that should appeal to me, which is the everyone's a white man hero. And I'm like, I don't want that.
No, I don't want that either. Except for viewership says otherwise.
I know, and that's the thing that bugs me. I want this stuff to be more diverse. I wanted the Phase 4 to work.
Right.
Commercially. Because creatively, I think it worked. I think Black Widow is better than people give credit for.
Yes.
I think Shang-Chi is a really good movie.
I agree.
I think people are not giving credit for it, but I think because Infinity War and Endgame were so good, everyone wanted things to keep growing from there, and there's just no way to do that.
Yeah.
And so I think everyone now is like, Marvel's falling off. And I'm like, they just kind of started doing things differently and people didn't like it. So now they're trying to regroup. And they lost people like me who are into everything.
You know how they can win back all the sort of bro fans?
How's that?
Is just have the Hulk just go Savage Hulk and just kick the shit out of things at some point.
That may be what Captain America does.
Yeah, Red Hulk. And...
I do hope, by the way, on Wonder Man that, if nothing else, I think the actor thing is like a big enough hook that they need that in there. If they don't have that, I will be disappointed.
Like I say, I want it to be like She-Hulk. I want it to be kind of fun. Mm-hmm. But I think She-Hulk was such a bomb for them that they got scared about it. They're scared about doing humor. But maybe Deadpool Wolverine will reinvigorate, remind them that it's okay to have fun with this stuff.
Yeah. Was She-Hulk a bomb?
She did not do well.
I just saw like the
and it was expensive.
I knew it was expensive. All the special effects.
Yeah,
it's too bad. The Tatiana Maslany did such an amazing job.
It was a great show.
Yeah,
but I think you will find people who are like, oh, that show was so terrible. And they're wrong. It was a great show.
They are off.
I'm glad to see more on Disney TV, because this year all we got was Agatha, and I like Agatha just fine, but it definitely feels like not enough Marvel for me.
Well, it's definitely the writer's strike didn't help.
It didn't help, yeah.
All that stuff.
But they were already in sort of that place of, like, we need to slow things down. People were griping there's too many superheroes.
And you're also wrong. Agatha's great.
Agatha's really good. It's just not all... It's the only Marvel I'm getting this year, Nick, and that's not enough. I guess technically I did get What If.
More.
I did get What If earlier this year, and it was very good.
I felt that way every year since Kroll came out.
Where's more Kroll?
When's the rest of Kroll? When's the Kroll ongoing series?
I'm honestly shocked that there hasn't been an announcement that they're going to remake Kroll.
There has been an announcement that they're going to remake
Kroll. Oh, are they?
Really?
Yeah,
really?
I think so. I think it's just one of those...
Nope, I typed in Kroll remake and...
It's
J.J. Abrams reportedly... Yep. But that was a year ago. Yep. So,
yeah. But it's probably never going to happen.
It might. You know, Abrams has... Is it nothing?
Don't you think that, like, a TV series set in the world of Kroll would be cool, though?
Potentially so. It wasn't, like, exactly known for its rich lore.
Yeah.
But what it did have is, like, some surprisingly interesting bits and pieces here and there. Like, you know, somebody was just talking about a book or something else recently that I was like, oh, that is, like, the deal with the Cyclopses in there. The Cyclopses made a deal with the Beast, the big bad guy in it, to be able to see the future. But his, like, evil twist on that was he's like, they could only see their own deaths. So every Cyclops knows when it's going to die and stuff. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's a cool idea. And there's some other bits and pieces in there. I think you could do it, but then I also look and I'm like, it seems like the Willow show kind of stumbled.
I was going to say, the Willow definitely scared a lot of people.
It is weird to me that they've never done, like, a Kroll comics or anything like that.
Yeah, you know, it's a show that, it's one of those movies that actually kind of was more of a cult movie than anything else, and I think there wasn't quite enough interest to make it happen.
We're getting a Silverhawks comic.
Yeah.
There's a Biker Mice from Mars comic. We didn't get Kroll.
That's true.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about some horror movies and TV. All right, so we were going to talk about some horror movies. Y'all got together and watched In a Violent Nature.
Yep, we did a little double feature with kind of one newer movie and one older one.
Yep,
In a Violent Nature is a weird sort of somehow mix between art house and grindhouse horror, because it's quite violent at times, but it's also arguably a very slow-moving kind of thing. When did it come out, Nick? Just like in the last year, right?
It's 2024, yeah.
Yeah, it's very recent.
It's directed by a guy named Chris Nash. I think this may be his, like, at least first, like, big movie that he's
done. I think that's true. If we were to sum it up, and this is a pretty accurate way to sum it up, it's a slasher movie, like Jason-type slasher movie, from the point of view of the slasher.
Yep.
Imagine if the camera was behind Jason the whole time, almost from beginning to end. There are some exceptions, but and he was never, in fact, like almost never really running or anything, but always kind of moving at this same monotonous pace.
Yeah.
Like a force of nature, one might say.
It's true.
That title, In a Violent Nature, is kind of suggestive of that. I ended up quite liking this weird little movie. Nick, where did you stand?
Well, this is one of those weird movies where I initially was like, okay, I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I've kind of ruminated on it a bit and thought about it, it stuck with me.
Yeah.
And I've kind of adjusted my rating, because I was like, it was a 2.5 for me. It wasn't like amazing. It wasn't bad.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gone up to almost 3. It's 3.5 now in my brain.
In my Letterboxd review, I was wavering between 3.5 and 4, and realizing that I liked enough of what it did to land on a 4 for me.
Well, what it did specifically that I enjoyed is the explaining stuff through conversation, like overheard conversation.
Right.
And
because actually he does literally move so slow, and you will spend a fair amount of time watching him walk through the woods.
Yeah.
Although I will say this, I think they're actually very interestingly filmed scenes, but it's not going to be for everyone.
When we were watching, you were kind of saying that it's akin to kind of like the cozy, like indie horror games, like video games.
Oh yeah, just that reminded me of those ones that they would call walking simulators.
Walking simulators. Yeah. And it definitely had that aspect, but you're not wrong.
And he is a somewhat sympathetic villain, at least at times.
Yeah.
He's pretty brutal.
Brutally killing like,
but he, because he walks so slow, as he approaches places like, you know, some a clearing in the forest where some kids are, or somebody's house, and you hear people talking through the window, you hear their conversations for like a minute or two as he approaches, and very often those conversations are not just random; they are moving the story forward or revealing something about him.
Which I thought was very clever, because basically you're trying to do all like get everything you would normally do in kind of like a different narrative style.
Yep.
Out of just snippets, and right. I thought that was exceptionally done.
Right,
and
it doesn't feel like super cheesy or anything like that. Like there's a sequence where there's some he kind of I guess holds back, and the camera does go and linger on these teens that are kind of hanging out around a campfire, and they do at that point in the movie. There's somebody's like, "Hey, did you ever hear about such and such? The legend of whatever right. his name is." And he goes on to tell the story, and it's actually an interesting reveal. It's not like, oh, this is the most different thing I've ever heard, but it's a kind of a cool new idea for that evokes Jason.
Yeah,
you know, the there was something, some cruelty brought upon a, like a young person, and revenge, supernatural revenge and stuff. But it was interesting, and as like everybody is kind of riveted to the story, I felt pretty drawn to the story too.
There's also just some story decisions on also kind of letting a scene breathe.
Yeah.
There were sequences that I think because we're so, like, programmed by, like, traditional horror and new horror.
Lots that of we cuts expect, and all that stuff.
We expect cuts, but we also expect, like, jump scares and, like, kind of, like, the traditional sense
not
a
jump
of
a scare
scene.
Movie.
This is not a jump scare movie. It is kind of...
Although I did find, like, the last 10 minutes, which are in some ways the weirdest, the most sort of artsy sequence in it, but I did find it also very suspenseful because I was like, this tension was strained during
that. Yeah, it's true. You expect something to happen where it's like, it defies expectations. And
right.
I think that's kind of where I was like, oh, you're kind of hooking me by taking something we know.
Yep.
Just a traditional slasher film. And... turning it slightly because this is not untraditional. We're getting like
right. You will
crazy
see teens
kills.
Stabbed. There are some very violent kills.
There is a in the middle of the movie. There is a literal kill I have never seen before.
Yeah, where I think we're all like, oh my god.
Yeah, and I don't want to describe that because if you do watch it, it is one of the most memorable things I've seen in a film.
Now this is the era of Terrifier, and I've seen little bits and pieces, and I'm not a Terrifier guy. That's all a little too torture porny for me.
Right.
And I will say this. This scene, though violent, was not about the sort of extended pain, which is kind of the seems to be the deal in Terrifier stuff. And so, in that sense, the high level of violence in this didn't bother me as much as what I've glimpsed in those movies. Yeah, that scene, and it was also darkly funny, right? We were laughing.
Yeah. Oh,
we were
yeah.
laughing at it too.
I mean,
and in that fun way, like, well, like in general, I think if you're going to watch a Friday the 13th movie, and that's not my thing, but when I did once upon a time sit and watch like the six or so that had come out up until that point, like maybe six or seven, I watched it with a bunch of friends and we were all laughing at them and stuff.
Right.
And that's not a bad way to do a slasher movie.
We were making jokes, and it, I think, enhanced the movie in some ways, because...
Although every once in a while, I did want to tell y'all to shut up, because I was like, sometimes people would be talking quietly.
It's true.
And there is, like, small details, and I was like, I bet that was something slightly important. I'm gonna watch it again sometime soon. I want to show it to my brother, and I think I'm going to have the subtitles on, so I can, catch
sense.
Any little details.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think we'd both recommend it.
I would definitely recommend
it. If you heard, though, that if in listening to this and you hear us say there's extended scenes of him walking and not everybody's going to go for that, and you're like, oh, God, that does sound bad, well, it will be bad for you. And don't watch this movie. But if you think that you might be able to watch it if it's interesting enough, then check it out.
I can't say that this is boring.
No.
There's walking, and but even the walking is fun to watch.
It is. There's something about it. And there is some dark humor and things around about this. And some of these teens are doofuses, and you're like, I kind of hope he dies. And there's some entertaining. And so there are still some surprise sort of scenes here and there.
Yep.
You know, somebody gets injured at some point, and they're trying to get away from him. And we know he really kind of only has one pace.
It's true.
Well, you know, there is a little bit of an uptick later on. It's kind of entertaining to see that from the perspective of the killer.
Right.
And a different kind of tension.
The other movie y'all watched
was an a late 80s, like 87 movie called Near Dark.
1987, yeah.
People who are of a certain age will know this as a pretty cool vampire movie, but a little bit overshadowed by Lost Boys.
Yes.
Which was the other modern vampire movie that came out in 1987.
Lost Boys is like a little more comedic and is, what's his name, Joel Schumacher?
Yep.
This is Catherine Bigelow. It's a little darker. It's got its fun to it.
It does, but it is it's a couple of things to know that I didn't know.
Kind of edgy fun.
It's kind of ethereal. Like, it's very kind of like dreamlike in some aspects.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And no doubt the score by the sort of famous synth group of the era, Tangerine Dream, has something to do with that.
Yep.
It is also, it is a vampire movie, but they never call themselves vampires.
Right.
They also never show fangs.
Right.
So it is very kind of like they just.
But like there's zero doubt. There's zero doubt.
But they just, it's just a different.
They seem more like dangerous bikers than
they are. Right. They're basically
not just bikers, but like southwestern kind of bikers that look a little like. Yeah, they do. That's the vibe they give off. They're all leather jackets and dirty, grungy looking dudes.
Yeah, they're sure.
And it's a fun cast. So it's Bill Paxton. He is easily the most screen hogging side character.
But it also has Lance Henriksen, Jeanette Goldstein, a lot of the aliens people in there. Jeanette Goldstein was Vasquez.
Well, yep.
Catherine Bigelow was married to James Cameron for a time.
Yep.
So the basic premise of this, if you haven't seen it, is that this kind of, what is he, 20-something, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of out of high school.
He's like a good old boy who lives on his dad's farm and smokes cigarettes. He's like a Marlboro man.
It's funny, our main character, our hero is Adrian Pazdar from Heroes.
From Heroes and from Prophet.
Yeah. But he's very young.
He's kind of a little bit of a doofus, but good-natured. And he finds himself chasing after this kind of short-haired girl who's kind of given him a little bit of the brush off. And she's, you know, something's odd about her, and he really wants to hang out with her. And he pursues her, and they end up, like, I don't know, driving around, going out. Not sure if anything is going to happen. Only, you know, she's a vampire.
Sure.
And it seems like maybe the reason she was kind of keeping him at arm's length was she's like, you don't want to get into this world. She already had a little sympathy for him, and he kind of kept on like, come on, babe, come on. And she's like, okay.
She bites him.
She bites him.
And in this world, turning a human is like pretty instantaneous.
Turning human?
Turning into a vampire is very like instantaneous.
Right. And the interesting thing is, though, but because the word is never spoken and he doesn't know what just happened, he thought that it was just kind of an intense makeout session.
Yeah. He just finds his body smoking in the sun.
He's burning in the sun. But before that, he finds himself he looks, and they really convey this, sick to his stomach, needing the blood. But at the first, he doesn't even know what it is he needs. He tries to eat some regular food and he gets, like, violently sick.
Yep.
And then the biker type people, the outlaw vampires, are like, they're kind of annoyed that she created another one. You know, they're almost like, man, you just created a big pain in the ass for us.
Right.
But they give him his shot, and after he holds back for a while, but eventually they kind of feel like he's one of them. And this becomes a story about he's torn between his dad and his, like, little kid sister are literally out looking for him and just scouring around because they think he's been kidnapped or something. And then he's got this kind of outlaw found family, and they're bad people. They murder innocent people they find along the road, but they're fun, and they kind of... He belongs, right?
Mm-hmm.
I almost felt like this was like... And this works as an allegory of like, oh, if you had your drug friends, you're doing very illegal stuff, you might be doing dangerous stuff, but you have a connection with them that's so big that it's like overshadows
They're
things.
They're fairly disgusting individuals.
They are.
I remember the scene in the bar that they kill everyone.
There's a scene that when I was a kid, I remember seeing this because my brother was watching it, and I guess if it was 1987, then I would have been like 14. And I was a little shocked at the violence when Bill Paxton jumps up on the bar and he's got these sharp spurs and he just like does this real slick move with a back foot kind of like kick where he just slits the throat of the bartender. And I was like, oh, that's dark.
It is. There's nothing that's very happy in this film.
But you know what? But it's not like a grim film.
No, it's not.
It's outlaw kind of dreamy, as you said. There is a dreamlike thing. I liked it. I don't think it's a great movie, but I think it's a good movie.
Yeah.
And if you plug into its vibe, I think you're going to have a really good time. And a little more thoughtful than one expects.
I think it's a good movie, but I choose Lost Boys.
Really?
I do.
I mean, you've seen Lost Boys a lot more. You've listened to it the one time recently.
Lost Boys is a big crowd pleaser compared to this movie.
It's a crowd pleasing romp that has, like, it's just fun and funny.
I mean, Lost Boys might be like a 5-star movie, and this can just, it's very good at what it does, but what it does is so specific that it's just not as fun as Lost Boys. It couldn't be.
Now, I will say,
it doesn't have the sax man.
Also, Lost Boys you can get. You can buy it. Stream it somewhere. You can buy it.
Near Dark.
Y'all had to do a quest.
We did do a little bit of a quest.
Eventually, we would find that one of the people that we saw it with had bought it during one of the handful of
periods
times
it was available.
It was available.
I mean,
yeah,
you could get it for $50.
No, it's like 80.
No, no. I found it for $40.
Okay,
all right. It's finding bargains.
But then Serena said that she had it, so we're spared that.
Yeah,
but
I was sad not to get to see this with y'all. I actually really like this movie. I haven't seen it in quite a few years, so.
I really tend to like Catherine Bigelow's movies.
Yeah.
She makes really good action. I mean, Point Break alone ranks pretty high for its kind of crazy fun.
Yep. Nick, you were going to talk about two others that you watched.
Right. I was going to talk about... I'm going to talk kind of a little bit about Strange Darling. I don't want to reveal too much. But this is a new kind of serial killer thriller by director J.T. Mulner, who's relatively new. I think he's done a few things. And it stars character actors. Willa Fitzgerald, who, if you watch the first season of Reacher, she was the cop.
Okay.
The deputy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then Kyle Gallner, he was in Smile. He played the cop in Smile, the ex-boyfriend, and been in a bunch of just random stuff. He was in the newer Scream movies, in one of those. But it kind of, so I will say this: it is shown in six scenes.
Okay.
And the scenes are shown out of order.
Oh.
So the director is sort of playing with expectations and ideas of a kind of cat and mouse game between a serial killer and their victim.
Okay.
And it's really kind of thought-provoking on how things unfold.
Hmm.
But telling you how they unfold just spoils the kind of...
Okay.
Insanity.
I mean, I've seen how this kind of thing can be done in something like Memento.
It's definitely you're playing with sort of time and point of view and
say the name of this one more time.
It's called Strange Darling.
Strange Darling, okay.
There's a couple of guest appearances in this by Ed Begley Jr. and Barbara Hershey that I thought were perfect. They play kind of a couple hippies who run afoul of these two individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very entertaining.
What's the overall tone of this? Can you say a movie that it's kind of the tone is similar to? Is it like Seven or
no,
is it like...
When I was watching it, and this is not quite the nail in the head, but it's reminds me a little of a Tarantino flick.
Okay.
Kind of a kind of wild
little
ride,
pop.
Little pop. The sound design is very in your face, especially when certain characters appear. It's very kind of loud and crescendo.
Huh.
Kind of just, it gives you expectations and then kind of flips them on their head.
Okay.
So I was very impressed with it. I thought it was a one of those people should watch. It's not going to be for everybody.
What'd you rate it on Letterboxd?
I gave it, I want to say a 3.5 or...
Okay.
No, I gave it 4 stars.
What?
It was really thought-provoking. It was thought-provoking. I really dug it. Serena gave it 5 stars.
Wow.
What? Get out.
But this is... you could rent it for $6 on whatever.
What?
I know. Get out. The other movie I was going to mention...
Yeah, no, I want to see this movie. I'm probably going to check it out.
It's a movie that Dave hates, apparently. this is the 1986 version, original movie, The Hitcher.
So it is actually a popular cult movie, though.
Yeah, I'd never seen it. I didn't... I kind of knew it was kind of grindhouse a little bit.
Yep.
I knew Rutger Hauer was in it. That
Rutger Hauer plays a scary stalker man.
He does, but I kind of enjoyed plugged into the ride pretty early on, and it goes into sort of bonkers territory of like Rutger Hauer being so kind of omniscient, essentially, like he knows the ins and outs of this.
He's like, I'm playing a cat and mouse game with you, and I have all the cards.
But the scenes that show up, I thought were really, really interesting. Like this kid who's basically doing he's delivering a car to some guy in California, and he's played by C. Thomas Howell. He's like a young kid, but he's been in a bunch of stuff since then. I had to look him up. But the scene with him picking up Rutger Hauer, kind of how that goes, is just one of those very more uncomfortable sequences. Mm-hmm. It's like the dialogue is so well written and delivered that I was like, oh, this is kind of Speak No Evil territory of like saying things in such a way that I was like, oh shit, what would I do in this situation? And then it kind of goes bonkers.
Right.
And I thought Jennifer Jason Leigh, who looked like a little baby.
Is she the girlfriend?
She's the girl that he kind of runs. She runs a diner.
Okay.
She manages a diner that he runs into and then kind of
tries to get to help her or to help him or whatever.
But yes, this movie is brutal. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of deaths. So they don't show everything. It's kind of a you don't show, you tell.
Right.
And there's some stuff that I was surprised I got away with, like whole families getting killed, like kids and stuff.
Whee!
Yeah, no. Very exciting. No. But I was really, I hate to say that I was into it because that seems dark and depraved.
No, it has an allure, like it's like it's kind of dark. Spiral is kind of entrancing. Part of it is Rutger Hauer's performance.
It is.
And I think what I do remember of it, it's been a little bit since I've seen it, is that, it has like sort of more engaging dialogue than one would expect.
Yeah. And Rutger Hauer, as we know, can play creepy.
Yeah.
Very, very well. Mm-hmm. So for that alone, it was worth watching. But I really enjoyed it. I don't think it's going to be for everybody, but it's available on Max right now.
When did that movie come out? Was that like another 1987 movie?
I believe it was 86.
Yeah, it was
86.
Yep.
Okay. But it's a quick 98 minutes. It's like what horror movies kind of should be.
Yep.
Get in, get out, leave some bodies on the floor.
Let the bodies hit the floor.
I have not watched any horror movies this week. I did binge. I've got Apple Plus back to watch Shrinking.
Yep.
And went back to watch season 2 of Loot, which I had not watched. This is a Maya Rudolph show where she is a billionaire married to a Elon Musk type played by Adam Scott.
Yep.
I forget how good Adam Scott is at playing scumbags.
Oh, he's wonderful. Great.
So in the first episode, she finds him cheating with a very young girl who is like the daughter from Kimmy Schmidt. I recognized her this time. I rewatched season 1.
Yeah.
And then I went in with season 2.
I watched the majority of season 1.
I really like this. So Molly gets like $87 billion and becomes a billionaire and goes to work for her foundation now that and she has been living this life of like, Molly is Maya Rudolph's character.
Yeah.
She is, she's basically been in this sort of bubble of rich people and now all of a sudden she is doing her charitable foundation stuff and trying to do good with her money and trying to live like a normal person.
Yeah, she didn't know how things work.
Yeah. And it's got a great supporting cast, Nat Faxon, Ron Funches.
Yep.
But at the end of the first season, I'd forgotten this, she gives this big speech after she dates another billionaire, and they're trying to make this machine that will turn water, that will take dirty water and turn to clean water, and doesn't work. And he's like, well, let's go escape to my Swiss chalet, and she instead gives a big speech about how billionaires shouldn't exist, and she's going to give away all her money.
Okay.
So season 2 starts there, and they're trying to basically give away all her money in various charity projects, that kind of thing.
Ted Brewster's Million type.
Kind of thing, yeah. And then there's a thing develops where they buy a hotel, and they're trying to like turn it into a common living space for the homeless.
Okay.
But in amongst all that, there's like she and Nat Faxon, who's like the accountant at the firm, start developing a will-they-won't-they romance. Ron Funches' character, who becomes like besties with her Asian gay rich guy who does not, it's like her assistant.
Doesn't he have like a Dragon Ball Z kind of?
Yeah, he calls him his he says he's Goku,
yes.
And the Asian guy is his
Vegeta?
Vegeta. He's like, we were rivals, but he's Ron Funches plays this, like, nerdy dude.
Yeah. Like, rivals that respect each other or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, so they become friends, and they wind up basically starting a wrestling league.
Okay.
So that's their sort of subplot going on. It's a lot of fun. I think the writing is solid, not great. This is not like it's not a Mike Schur show. It's like it's a fun comedy.
Yeah.
It's mostly surviving on the strength of the characters. The characters are really good.
If it wasn't Maya Rudolph.
If it wasn't Maya Rudolph, and it would not work as well. But Maya Rudolph's great.
She is.
And so yeah, a show about a billionaire does not seem like a show I'd be super into, but this is not like what was the show that was on Max that everybody loved? Succession.
Oh, Succession.
It's not Succession. This is more the like billionaires shouldn't exist. Here's where our femme billionaire is going to what we wish billionaires were like.
But if you have Apple TV and you're not watching Shrinking, what are you doing?
Shrinking's great, and everyone should watch it.
Yes.
What's Shrinking about?
It's not about shrinking.
Right? That's why I asked.
It's about
what's the one-line
therapists.
Thing?
Okay. Yeah. And kind of...
Like a shrink.
Yes, exactly.
I got it.
Yeah. Harrison Ford is in it. He's fantastic in it. I think it's maybe my favorite role he's played since coming old.
I mean, I feel like he's just essentially playing himself.
Yeah.
He's kind of curmudgeonly,
yeah. Jessica Williams from The Daily Show is in it. She's fantastic. Jason Segel is the lead, and he's fantastic. Krista Miller from...
I'm actually kind of surprised at how good Jason Segel is. I just remember him as the dopey dumbass from How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
And you can see he has grown as an actor and kind of can portray...
He's really good here.
He is. Yeah.
I think I've mainly seen him as the dopey dumbass, and he's good at it.
Yeah.
But he's
great in this. He's a dad whose wife died in a car accident about a year ago, and he kind of descended into booze and drugs, leaving his teenage daughter to fend for herself with the neighbor's help, and he sort of comes back out of it.
Next door
neighbor is Krista Miller, who is Bill Lawrence's wife. Lawrence is the co-creator of the show.
Yeah, she's
on Cougar Town. She was on Scrubs. People would know her.
But this season with their son and like being the kind of like pervy watching the daughter from across the street.
Well, no, like they hooked up, and now she wants nothing to do with him, and he is still completely in love with her.
Yes. It's an amazing show.
Yeah, it's great. Love it. It's really funny, and I recommend it. And that's why I got Apple TV back. I've got to watch some other stuff, but Loot was one of those I wanted to go through. And yeah, if you're looking for a fun 20 episodes of sitcom to watch with Maya Rudolph, you could do worse.
Yep.
All right, I think that wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Happy Halloween.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.